right, everybody, welcome to the Hunter's Quest podcast. This is your host, Hunter McWaters, and today I'm joined by big wave surfer and adventurer and hunter and spear fisherman, Mark Healy. How you doing, man?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, man. Like I said, we kind of were chatting a little bit before we started. I grew up in Virginia Beach. Actually, I didn't say this to you before, but I taught myself how to surf on one of those big, long BZ like foam boards.
Yeah.
In Kauai, actually, when we were on vacation one year, and I kind of dabbled in it for a little bit. But like I was saying to you, the waves in Virginia Beach were always pretty good, like in November, December, and I was like, put on a wetsuit and go into the water or go hunting. I'm going hunting.
Yeah, I don't blame you. That'd be an easy metric for me. But everybody starts out on those big foam boards. I would have if they were around when I was a kid. There weren't many of them around.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's tough. You got to be dedicated over on the East Coast to get into surfing and have it stick. But
yeah.
I found hunting, you know, bow hunting later in life. It wasn't until I was 29 that I got into that.
Okay. Yeah, so I mean, like, the town I grew up in, surfing, like, all the, like, cool kids were surfers. Like, the really cool kids were surfers. So I wasn't really one of those. I was kind of an outsider a little bit. Like, you know, like I said, I tried it. But anyway, man, I found you through, like I said, my brother-in-law, who's a big-time surfer. So he's going to be excited about this. And then, you know, as we mentioned before, you're also a bow hunter, so I thought it'd be really cool to talk. And I think we have some common friends. Do you know Pedro Ampuero?
Yeah, I know him from. He was living on Maui for a long time.
Oh, I didn't know that. When did he live over there?
God, that would have been. I think he moved back to Spain. I'm guessing here, probably like 7 or 8 years ago.
Okay.
But Pedro's like one of those super smart guys. He was working on the telescope on Maui.
Okay. Wow. I didn't even. So he told me he was an engineer. I just got back from Spain. I did a hunt with him. And I think that's how I got in touch with you, because I actually messaged you like 2 years ago. But I'm sure you get like millions of DMs that you don't even see. But I think you like liked a reel that I did with Pedro or something.
Okay. Yeah. I would have. Makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I think because you liked my post, probably like my message like went into your regular folder, not your spam folder. And then so that's how I think we linked
that's
up.
That's probably why. There's so much stuff that gets buried up. There's crazy people that write me, especially about 2 years ago during the COVID stuff, because I was getting hundreds of crazy people messaging me during that. So
why is that? Did you take some kind of stance? How come you got messages during COVID?
Oh, because I was posting shit that didn't go along with the narrative. Like, hey, good guys, about, you know, think about this before you get jabbed with something that's experimental and things like that. And oh my God, I would get so much hate mail. I hope your family dies. They have people writing all of my sponsors trying to get me fired.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a hellscape in that message request inbox on Instagram.
Yeah, I can imagine, because I don't. So in the hunting kind of world, because I was the same way. Like, I was very anti. I'm not like an anti-vaxxer 100%, but definitely with experimental stuff with no data on. And I kind of felt from the very beginning of COVID that it was like very fishy, to say the least. So
yeah,
I never
if you
bought
had
into
any
it.
Instinct left in your body, they were all the alarm bells were going off.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I remember, like, I was pretty, like, militant anti-mask. I remember one time during the height of COVID, I was walking through an airport, no mask. Literally everyone had a mask on. I was getting so many, like, just evil stares. A couple guys, like even, like, said something to me, like, angrily. And I remember I was walking, I saw this one young lady about my age without a mask, and we made eye contact, and we were like, yep.
Yep.
We just kept walking. It was awesome. But anyway, what I was saying was, like, in the hunting world, I feel like a lot of people kind of were more like thinking it was, you know, BS or whatever. But I can imagine probably in your world, in the surfing world, there's a lot more like libs and stuff, probably.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a different dynamic, but not as much as people would assume. I mean, it all comes down to like, I don't really have a side. I'm just like, take each thing for what it is and try to drown out the background noise of what people are trying to tell you to think and
For
take
sure.
each issue on its own. And I don't know, it's like just that tribalism and everybody doesn't want to be socially ostracized. So they're going to do the song and dance and go through the motions. And even if they don't believe it, which is crazy because I'd get so many people during the COVID stuff would come and they'd like pull me aside in the grocery store, or just walking around on the street and be like, whisper to me, like, I'm so glad you're doing saying this stuff, man. I think the same way. I'm like, why are you whispering in public? No, that's a red flag. Like, things are really wrong. You got to whisper about something like that in public. Like, it's working on you. You're scared right now.
For sure, man.
Anyways, but
Yeah,
yeah, the
that was a
surfing
wild
world
time.
is a bit different than the hunting world.
Yeah, I can imagine. But that's all right. So, I think I spent a little time kind of learning a little bit about your background and stuff like that, and some people may know, but and I don't want to make you like repeat the same stuff. Hopefully we can get into some stuff that might be a little bit unique, but just so people have a little bit of a context that may not have heard of you or whatever, I'd love to just start off with just like your brief background bio, just kind of who you are and what you do if people don't know.
So I'm born and raised on the North Shore of Oahu in Hawaii, which is kind of like the center of the surf world, definitely on like the big wave side, and just it's kind of like the mecca of surfing. So grew up here in the ocean, spearfishing, fishing, surfing my whole life. Became a professional big wave surfer, so there's kind of like niches and specialties within surfing. And I was always much better at big wave surfing. I like that. I like the idea of like pushing what's humanly possible, in surf. And so I did that, just chasing big swells around the world. So there's always a winter season. You get the big swells during winter season. So northern hemisphere winter, would be bouncing between like Hawaii, and Northern California, maybe some Baja, Mexico, stuff like that. And then as soon as it switches over, you're in the southern hemisphere for their winter, our summer. So it's like South America, Australia, Indonesia, Fiji, Tahiti. So I was just bouncing around, chasing the biggest waves in the world for a long time, and had endorsements and contracts, and I still do, that I work with, and that's how I make a living. Besides that, I've been doing stunt work for probably like 15 years. So that's like my little side job. Do a few
Nice.
months of that a year. So working on, Hollywood movies, TV
So,
shows.
like, when there's a movie and they want to show a guy surfing a big wave, like, and the actor obviously can't do it, they call guys like you.
If I'm lucky, surfing stuff's easy. I barely ever do surfing stuff. It's
Okay.
mostly like fights, falls,
Oh, okay.
standing in a car sometimes. It's like getting blown up, getting kicked
So
out an
that's
escalator.
separate from the surfing stuff.
Yeah, it's just general stunts or doing stunt rigging, assisting in stunt rigging. So when people are flying on the lines and, flying through the air on green screens, helping out with that.
Okay, so I gotta ask because I'm just interested. How do you get into that?
You get it. Almost every stunt guy and gal, they come in because they had a specific category that they really ticked the box for. So I got in because I started by doubling people for surfing and water stuff like 15 years ago. But then it rolls into doing all the other stuff. And it's the more people hire you and they feel like they can count on you and you're not too terrible to be around, you get more responsibility. And once you're And especially as such a big part about it is like knowing how to act on set, knowing how
Yeah.
to do things safely, and knowing camera. So it makes more sense for them to be like, hey, it's a stretch. We've never thrown you in a car yet, but this is kind of like a mellow car gag. But you understand camera, you understand how to operate and the safety protocols and everything. So we're going to give you your chance at a car thing. It's up to you if you mess it up or not. You do a good job, then you start training in the car stuff more. So that's everybody gets in. A lot of people get in from like Cirque du Soleil. I've worked with a lot of Cirque du Soleil former people. gymnasts, car racers, a lot of motorcycle guys. And
Interesting.
there's a handful of us surfers that worked our way in and got our foot in the door.
Nice, man. That's interesting. So I'm interested to hear a little bit more about the travel aspect of your job because I am similar in that. So, obviously surfing and hunting, there are similarities, which I'd like maybe we could talk about later, but they're also very different. But I have to plan 6 or 7 trips per year. Normally at least, across the country, like probably Wyoming is the closest place I normally go, all the way to Spain, probably New Zealand next year. I'm coordinating camera guys. I'm, worrying about different seasons and tags and yada yada yada, producing a television show around each one of those hunts, sometimes two. So from what I've heard, because there's also a photo and video aspect to your work, there's relationships with companies and sponsors and like working in new products, and a lot of the dynamics seem very similar. So I'm really interested to hear kind of what, maybe you could start from like a higher level, like what a season might look like, and then maybe drill down to like what an individual trip might kind of look like.
Yeah. So for the surf stuff, it's wild because it comes down to the hour usually. Like you'll literally be holding a reservation that leaves within the next 10 hours for Chile and one for Cape Town, South Africa. And you're making the decision and you're calling. And because so much of like your whoever you like to travel and go to and trust and be at big wave spots with, it's like an international group. You have your guys from Hawaii, but you're like, well, what flights can our boy from South Australia come from? What flights can our South African friend come from? And you're trying to make this all land at the same time. And we have to run the safety. So we have to figure out the safety at the same time as well. Try to source a good jet ski. A lot of the places are really far from any primary medical care. So it's like a lot of times you'll have like a giant rescue sled, giant surfboard bags, a defibrillator, a full kit, like all kinds of stuff. And you'll be running down there, especially in the southern hemisphere, because it's so much closer to Antarctica. The storms get closer. So it's a similar situation almost as like hurricanes on the East Coast, where there's going to be like a 4 hour window where it's potentially the wind's going to be doable and the waves will still be big. And then 30% of the time, if you're doing it real well, you just get totally skunked. You fly across the world. So it's like the hunting stuff is so much easier for me to organize.
For
It's
sure.
just trickier with a bow having filming. That's tough.
Yeah. But I mean, like, I guess at the end of the day, I mean, although you're kind of at the mercy of the animals, it's less condition dependent, I guess. Like, maybe less, l slightly less variables than the surf, perhaps.
Yeah, just being able to put it on a calendar and be able to plan for a specific place takes a lot of the burden off. And then, but it's like, it's so much pressure when you're there, it's knowing that I've wadded up and thrown away so many YouTube episodes where it just didn't pan out. I should probably just put them out there, but it's like I feel bad doing it, for the viewers. But yeah, it's a lot of pressure.
For sure. And like, talk to me a little bit about that too, because I heard another podcast you're kind of talking about what one of these trips looks like, and it reminded me of last year I did an Alaska trip where we were getting taken up this river in a riverboat like 70 miles into the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge and dropped, and our only way out was we had two inflatable pack rafts. And my cameraman had never been in a pack raft. I've been in a pack raft maybe three times. But flying to Alaska, I didn't hardly sleep the night before. It's a long journey. We get to the boat launch. We have 1 hour to unpack our stuff from like airplane mode into like hunt mode. And then we're getting like 3 hour boat ride up this river and dropped and just like, okay, see ya. And I remember just being like, kind of have that game time jitters and like, whoa, like this is really intense. And it reminded me some of the stories you were telling about some of your trips. So like maybe zoom down on like one trip that was kind of like extreme like that, and then how you were able to like sort of manage those emotions and still perform at a high level, after all the factors that are against you.
You mean like a surf trip?
Yeah.
God, there's a lot. One excuse me. One fun one was a long time ago. I got invited to this big wave surf event in Cape Town, South Africa, at a spot called Dungeons. And the thing about these surf events, these big wave ones, is that they only run if the waves hit a certain minimum size. So it doesn't even get big enough for them to call these events on usually once every 5 to 7 years
I
they
guess
end up
what's
running.
that size that like is big enough to be a big wave event?
It starts at about 30-foot faces,
Wow.
goes all the way up from there. So these are like major weather events where
Yeah.
everything has to come together.
And just like for people who are listening that have never experienced the ocean, as a grown man, you can go out and probably, I don't know, 4 or 5 foot waves and get completely like rolled and like held under and like have a bad time. 30
Oh
foot
yeah,
is
help.
like insane amount of power.
It's violent.
Yeah.
And so it was the first time I got invited to that event, which it was kind of like one of the standout events back then. And so I was motivated. So I had to fly from Hawaii. It's called on. You got 3 days in advance. It's going to take 36 hours at best to get there. So I flew into I believe it was forget which airport it was. Was it JFK? I'm not sure. So I went all the way over there. That's already taken about a day of travel. I go to get on my flight to South Africa, and they're like, "You don't have a totally clear empty page in your passport. They won't let you into South Africa." I had a bunch of pages with just one stamp on it
That's weird.
because of all these lazy
Yeah, they just
people.
go,
It's
ah.
like, "Rat bonk."
Yeah.
I'm like, "You're kidding me. They gotta let me in." And they're like, "Nope." I'm like, "I have to get to this event. Like, there's no way." And they're like, "Sorry." And the flight leaves. And I'm just like, "Oh my God, I'm gonna miss this event." So I start getting on the phone. I'm like calling like the consulate, like our senator from Hawaii, like trying to get somebody. It's late afternoon. I'm like, finally get a hold of somebody at the passport office in DC. And they're like, "Okay, yeah, we can schedule an appointment." I'm like, "Okay, thank God. Because I need it like now." They're like, "Oh yeah, next appointment's in 3 months from now." It's like, that's not gonna work. So I end up just freaking out, jumped in a cab, did a 5-hour taxi cab ride,
Oh
like
my gosh.
not an Uber. This is just straight up taxi cab
Yeah.
ride. Went to into the capital, to the main passport office of the whole US. I went in there and I'm like, "Hey, I don't have an appointment, but can you put more pages in my passport?" And they're like, "Okay, it'll be 40 minutes." I was like, "What?
Whoa.
Yes, I'm on." So I got the ticket bumped to the next day to South Africa. Got like 5 hours back. I think I spent like $1,500 on the
Yeah,
cab
so you took
fare.
a taxi from New York to DC, basically.
I forget which airport I was coming in from. It took a
That's
long,
wild.
long.
I mean, it's about a 5 hour drive, so that makes sense, which is insane.
So I must have landed in the morning to be able to pull that off before it closed that afternoon. But anyway, so I get on the flight, We get one afternoon. We get there in the afternoon. I get to go paddle out. The swell's rising out of Dungeons. But my surfboards never made it. They got lost. So a buddy from Hawaii that I grew up with was there, and he had some like old surfboards from the years before that he'd been leaving down there. And I was like, I guess I'll like the boards were way too small for me and everything. Fast forward to the next day of the event. The waves were giant. It was really big. I didn't know the lineup as well, so I figured I just had to take more chances. And I ended up making it into the final, and I was so exhausted by the time I got to the final, and I was using my friend's boards. I was just like, I got one last giant wave in me. I just have to put my head down and send it on one. I sent it on one at a place apparently like nobody sits and surfs usually, but I didn't know. And I just had one of the worst beatings of my life. I hit my head on the board and the board broke in half.
Oof.
And these are like giant big wave boards. So I broke my eardrum. And when you break your eardrum, your equilibrium is like all over the place. I was done. My body was cramping. My leash would have broke. I would have drowned for sure. But I just barely made it up. I couldn't hold my head above the water because I had my equilibrium and water safety grabbed me. And I just remember like they brought me back to the dock. Finals was over. I got like fourth or fifth or something. And right when we got to the dock, the airport delivery guy pulls up with my boards. Then I have a broken eardrum. I can't fly home. Pulls up to the dock with my boards. When you use somebody else's boards, usually during an event, you give them a cut of your earnings. So it was pretty funny because my buddy who I borrowed the board from got dead last in his first heat and ended up making more money out of the contest than I did because he wanted like a bigger cut because I used this crappy board. But that was like, you just had to do it. Like, there's no, these are decisions I'd never make now that I have a child and a family. But that back then, it's just like, every time you're out there, it's the end of the world. Throw everything at it.
So you have one child now. How old are you? Do you mind if I ask?
I'm 42. I
Okay.
got one 5-year-old girl.
Okay. So you were smart and got a lot of this dumb stuff out of the way before you had kids. I kind of started after I already had kids, but but like, obviously there's some element of danger to backcountry hunts and stuff like that, but it's really not anywhere near the amount of danger compared to going against one of these massive waves that could just kill you super easily. So, like, did you have a process, or do you have a process of like kind of getting back in the zone or like refocusing once you're kind of coming off this crazy travel and like it's like, okay, now I got to go enter. So anyway, I was saying, I don't know where you lost me, but there's some element of danger to backcountry hunts, but nothing compared to paddling out on one of these giant monster waves that can just destroy you and crush you and kill you in like 5 seconds. So, is there some way that you found that helps you kind of recenter or get back into the right mindset from going from, little sleep, bad food, travel, equilibrium, your circadian rhythm's all jacked up, and now you got to perform. Is there anything you that was able to kind of help you into that?
Yeah, I think what really has helped me is just an entire lifetime of free diving and breath holding because it's almost like every breath hold is a microcosm of that general experience you just described. There's kind of like an ease up, and then there's a point of potential crisis where your alarm bells are going off and you have to regather yourself and calm down again. But for me, what always helped is once things start spinning out of control, or you feel like are getting out of hand, is just refocusing on realistically, what do I have under my control right now? I'm gonna put out everything that is not under my control is out of the equation, and I'm gonna hyper focus on just what I'm doing. So it'd almost be like, if you were you're on a tightrope or something. It's like, okay, oh, I'm really high up. I'm looking around and refocusing just on balance and getting so locked into that the world around you kind of fades away. And just that hyper focus and compartmentalization of hyper focus on the things I can control. That's
Yeah.
just been a helpful mechanism for me always.
No, that's good, 'cause like you said, once you start like letting in too much, like just focusing on all the unknowns, all the variables, all the things that are going wrong, stuff tends to just like spiral out of control, and you're just like in a death spiral. Like,
Yeah, completely. Like he can't juggle that many things at once. It's too much to ask anybody to juggle that many things. And once you realize that it's self-inflicted doing that, and that you can change that anytime you want and focus on the things, tend to the part of the garden you can reach, then it becomes a lot easier, or manageable at least. Sometimes it's not easy at all. It's just manageable.
Yeah. So I'm kind of interested in this topic of like, doing basically like your passion as your career, 'cause like that's something I'm kind of in my second or third year of, and it's interesting. Was there a moment for you when you kind of realized, hey, I could like make a living surfing and kind of went for it? Or did it kind of just evolve? Like, how did that process happen?
Yeah, I'd say it happened around 14 years old. It was the first time I had like a good, well, I had a couple of little sponsors that helped me out with surf events. I never did great in surf events. I was the last person of like my peer group here to get picked up. I was fully on, I got great grades, even though I hated being in school. And I was like, oh, I'm going to get a academic or athletic scholarship, go to college, become a marine biologist. That was the path I was on. But it's pretty funny. When I was from third grade to fifth grade, anytime we got tasked with writing about a country, I'd always pick Fiji, and I always was fascinated with it. And I had read every book on Fiji in the Hawaii Public Library system. And next thing you know, I got picked up when I was, I think, 14 by a company called Rusty Surfboards. And the
Oh yeah, I remember
first trip
them.
that I did, they're like, "Do you want to go to Fiji?" I was like, "You're kidding. No way." And so right then I was like, because that was always my goal, is to travel the world and be curious and study the natural world. And I was like, "Wait a second. If I'm doing this through surfing right now, why would I go rot in a classroom
Yeah.
for the next like, how many years of my life to get to that point? That how about I explore and see if I can continue on this path of what I really want to do, which is see the world and be in the natural world and do it through surfing."
Yeah.
So that really sparked my interest. We went there for a week. We were packing the bags up in the boat to leave. And I just was like, I can't leave this place. So I ran into the guy who manages this tiny island. You could walk around in 10 minutes. And I was like, "Hey, I'll work here. Can I, like, I'll do anything. I'll wash dishes, whatever. Can I just stay?" And so they're like, "Yeah, okay." So I stayed, and it was just like a boatman apprentice for another like couple weeks. I
Nice.
didn't call my parents until I knew the flight left back to Hawaii, so they couldn't. There's like no way to get me back. I was like, "Hey, I'm staying." Came back was like with a mohawk and a taste for beer. A lot of fun stories.
Nice, man. So yeah, like how long have you been a professional surfer?
God, I'd say professional is when you're getting a meaningful paycheck for the time. So that started at 17, and I'm
Okay.
42 now, still doing it.
So, yeah, talk to me about that, like about making a career out of, 'cause like it's very different when you're on the outside looking in and it's like, "Oh, it's just oh, he's just surfing," or "Oh, he's just going hunting all the time." And I try to like I sit in this chair right here way more than I sit on the mountainside. I'm
Oh.
editing. I'm a salesman 6 months of the year, like talking to companies, trying to get support. It's a job like anything else, and there are days where it sucks, and you're like, "This sucks," and I, just like any other job. At the same time, I'm not complaining because it's amazing. But you at the same time, like, you don't want to get burned out. So anyway, just yeah, talk to me a little bit about like what that over the span of a career, what that's been like how you've been able to keep your love for it, and just kind of unpack that for me.
It's a tricky balance because the other thing, which I think is a really big factor, is like how corrosive it is to have yourself so often be the source of your attention. I don't think it's
Yes.
healthy. And so I always tell the younger guys in surfing, I'm like, you gotta be careful. It's like when you are your forward facing living, it's like, okay, yeah, I got a really good radiation suit on it. But if you're sitting around playing with, enriched uranium for how long is that suit good? Like, how's this gonna mess you up? Like, what amount of narcissism do you have to get to do this? So it's like trying to keep yourself honest and not being too into yourself. I've found, and it's definitely like I got friends that are like big in financial markets that surf more than me for like months on end. I'm supposed to be a professional surfer, but one of the ways that I've found that I really enjoy, because you get to build things at the same time and kind of get around you always being like the face and the main drive of it, is I help a lot with product design, and I consult a lot too with these relationships and connect a lot of dots. So to me, that helps me be able to build something, have some skin in the game, see the cause and effect, and not just make it about me all the time. So yeah, it's a delicate game to dance. If it was easy, then a lot of people would be doing it. But at the end of the day, what you're trying to do is have really good partners and brands that reflect the same values that you have. And that way it's not forced. Like, I don't do any forced things anymore. And that's one of the benefits of doing stunt work on the side and having other businesses on the side, is because I don't have to do anything. I can say no to anything. And it's amazing when you can say no to stuff and only go for things that you want, that aligns with your values and where you want to go. Everything opens up, just cracks open. And that was the problem I saw with most of the guys that are in like action sports and surfers, is their one sole thing. And so they felt like they could never say no. They had a famine mentality about things. And you end up doing stuff that isn't you, because some guy in marketing or some team manager wants you to do it, and they couldn't say no. And they just start getting watered down. They start getting further away from who they are. And then at when you don't have any options left, and they start being like, hey, you know what? Time for a pay cut. I'm like, okay, I guess so. So you gotta bring multiple, I guess, value vectors to companies. And you also have to not have all your eggs in one basket. And I think that's healthy for all people involved in that work relationship.
I definitely hear you on the trying to stay grounded, and 'cause yeah, it's like you are spending all your time like thinking about. It sounds terrible, but you're spending a lot of time thinking about yourself and like promoting yourself, and
But
then like
it's such a good lifestyle.
I
Like,
know,
I'm doing exactly what I want to do.
I know,
I would
man.
love to continue this lifestyle anonymously. That'd be fantastic. I would
Yeah,
be totally okay with that. But
just like one of those DJs with a huge mouse head. You're just surfing with a mouse head
it'd be
on.
awesome. That it'd be a lot easier. But yeah, that's a price you pay. There's always balance. There's give and take for the things you want.
Yeah. And I feel like too, like it can be easy when you get like so thick in, for me, it's like thinking about how I can add value to my partners and get new partners and get more support and stuff like that. 'Cause I'm still kind of at the beginning phases where I have to run really pretty lean. I'm doing well, but I'm still just in that growth phase where I'm scrapping for funding and stuff. And it's easy to kind of lose why you're doing what you're doing. And so the other night, like I was about to leave for my first hunt of the year, and I was just laying here on my couch, like looking at all these skulls, like over here, and just thinking about like, what's my real motivation? Like, why am I really doing this? Why am I putting myself in these situations? And they're not anywhere near as dangerous as like paddling out on one of these big waves, but like, why am I putting myself in these dangerous or uncomfortable positions? Like, what's my motivation? Like, so I don't know. I feel like that's kind of a conversation you have to have with yourself, like frequently to remind yourself. I'm interested to hear like what that conversation sounds like for you.
Oh yeah, I kind of it took a few decades to figure out this process, but just after really, really crazy stuff has happened, I've had a handful of really good friends die. I've almost died a bunch of times. Very fortunate to be around, but what I ended up on is like, okay, you gotta be super honest with yourself. Are you continuing to do this for money? If that's a sole factor for a risky pursuit, it's tough. Depends on the risk profile of it, I guess. Are you doing it because it's the only way you feel valued or special? Are you only doing it because if you think you stopped, that you'd be letting other people down? Do you actually enjoy this? Is it something you need? What would your life look like without it in it? So those are good things that I always try to go back over, kind of go back over the notes sometimes, because you never know. It's like it's for something like big wave surfing and the risk profile that has, you age out of it eventually. So everybody is like, okay, when's going to be the day? Is it going to happen naturally? It's kind of like a reverse of, the duckling leaving the nest from up high or whatever. I don't know if ducks are up high in nests or not, but it's kind of like, is this going to be a natural process of you just know the time intuitively? So it's a good thing to keep a bead on, because whether it's something that is like, you're not willing to die over because the reward risk ratio is out of whack. It's the same kind of thing as like on the hunting side of it, because I do film hunting. It's like, that's another animal's life. Do I need to kill this animal for a video right now? Or do I have enough meat in the freezer already? Oh, a third elk hunt got offered to me. Do I take that? Or do it, it's like kind of a once in a lifetime place, but I've killed an elk this season. Or do I just let somebody else go on that? Just like what you need, figuring out what you need and not getting too wound up and all that peripheral things that can cloud your judgment.
I don't know. Could you like, for me, I feel like I kind of. It's all the things you just said. Like, it's not like there's not like really just one motivation. There's like a bunch of motivations, but you can also kind of distill it down. And for me, I feel like it's like this desire I've always had to know the unknown. And people that are listening have probably heard me say this before, so sorry if this sounds cheesy, but and through that to know like the greatest unknown, which would be like God, I feel like the creator of all other unknowns. And like the desire to, like, I remember even from a small child, like having the fear of being an old man and looking back on my life with regret. Like, I could have done this. I never want to be that guy. So it's, my motivation is to really live life to the fullest and explore. I don't know, could you distill yours down to just kind of like one or two things?
Yeah, I agree for sure on the being young and being like, I am not going to be one of these old dudes that squandered their good health years
Yeah.
But I always found it so strange. You know, it's for some people. It wasn't for me, but I was like, you spend so much of your young life, you know, expected to be sitting in a classroom all the time and then going and putting in at a job that hopefully they don't just like rug pull you one day. But like, I'm 42. So when I was younger, this was more like the expectation before the internet economy and everything. And I'm like, and then you finally have enough money when your physical body is deteriorated far enough past its prime to be able to go and do things and figure out what you like. Like, it just never made sense to me. And I tell people that and they'd be like, yeah, kind of, it does make sense. I'm like, you've never thought about this? Like, it seems super simple to me. It doesn't make sense at all. But yeah, that's my, and I guess that is my other motivator besides like, you know, this front of house kind of like you're the person that's in front of the camera or whatever. Besides it being a vehicle to get there, that's what inspired me when I was a kid, is to be able to put that out there and like inspire other people, because that was super meaningful to me. Like, I was a kid with the stacks of hundreds of National Geographics and like the posters on my wall of like surfers, of bugs and fish, and had like 20 different aquariums and like watched every Discovery Channel show. Like, that stuff really inspired me.
Back when Discovery Channel was actually documentaries.
Yeah, it was really good. And like when Travel Channel first came out, it was super cool. So that stuff inspired me big time. So I guess to me that's meaningful. It's like when you hear like some young people or people come up to you and you're like, man, you inspired me to get started into hunting or spear fishing or work on breath work, and it helped me surf some bigger waves. Like, that to me, I'm stoked on. That makes me happy. I feel like you're in the cosmic sense giving back what you were given in a way. So that's definitely a big draw. I guess that's the most fulfilling aspect of all of it.
Yeah, man. That's funny. Like you remind me of me, like as a kid, just all the stuff I was into. And I actually remember my dad saying that. My dad's great. Love my dad. He was an awesome dad, still is. But I remember him actually saying that to me one time. He's like, "Yeah, you work hard while you're young so that you have money when you're older to do what you want to do." And I was just like, even as a kid, I was like, "What? No, I'm not doing that. It doesn't make any
But
sense."
yeah, but that was a different time. Like, you could, it's crazy. You look over here, and I was driving through one of the old neighborhoods, the old plantation neighborhoods, which is a lot of it is like old cane plantation or pineapple plantation over here. And it's like probably the third generation of kids in some of the houses. I was like, you could work an immigrant plantation job and buy a house here in like 10 years. Now, any of the single family house, which is what, like, three bedrooms, two baths, can have like no yard, have a meth lab next to it, is, I think the median price right now is 1.1 million
Oh
on this
my
island.
gosh, dude.
So that advice that they gave back then was actually a lot more relevant because they weren't looking at the same time frame that kids today are. Now it's like, go do it for like 70 years and you might buy a house one day. So,
When you're 60,
anyways,
you can
I'm
go
not
have a
trying to beat
hobby.
up on the generation before, is my point. It was a different time.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and my dad, I mean, it worked for my dad. He was really successful, and I think he enjoyed his career, and now he did make enough to where he can do what he wants. But it just never made sense for me personally. But yeah, man. So you, like you said, obviously I can tell that you are very in tune with the natural world. You're an observer, you're an intelligent guy, and you've also seen your own
Thanks.
mortality. You've also seen your own mortality up close, and you've seen other people lose their lives. I'm interested to know, like, what do you think about God, man?
I grew up in a Christian household. I grew up going to church. I definitely believe in God. I definitely see God work in a lot of ways. I think And this is just like my thing, right?
Sure, yeah.
I think it's like a game of telephone where, you pass a message in a big circle and everybody goes around and it turns out something pretty different in the end. I think a lot of people over the ages have tried to describe God in a lot of different ways. Some ways are obviously fundamentally different, which creates kind of, I guess, the borders between the different versions. But even within the same versions, they're through the lens of the time and the place in which this happened, you can see that from like the New Testament, Old Testament, everything like that. So that being said, I do believe in God. I think people really get bent out of shape over the semantics of it, and a lot gets lost. And it's almost like people could be describing the same thing and get into a fight over it just because of the way it's delivered.
Yeah, no, I hear you, dude. I mean, it's definitely caused, well, I'm not saying it's, yeah, people's religion, I guess, has caused a lot of problems throughout human history. I'll say
Well,
that.
yeah, it's a powerful thing.
Yeah.
It's so is fire, so is electricity. So it's a super powerful thing. And anytime you have something powerful that gives people an ability to project their own power or grift off of it or manipulate it to fit their will for their own personal gain, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
That can happen to good things. That can happen to bad things.
For
It's just a
sure.
very, very potent and powerful thing. And yeah, there's going to be shitty players within that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. That's always my argument with my friends when we're debating it. I'm like, why would you throw the baby out with the bathwater? We can find examples of bad players in every single powerful aspect of humanity.
Absolutely, man. Yeah, I mean, do you think you were, I mean, obviously I feel like some people are born with more of a desire to do the kind of stuff that you do. Do you think that, do you think you were made to do this kind of
Yeah.
stuff?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I'm the same as I was when I was for good and bad, probably since I was 5 years old. This has been validated from all my aunties and uncles and parents. But there's nothing forced about it. That's the most I can feel myself is when I'm out there. Because it's so cumbersome. To operate on that kind of level that you can in Big Sur or in nature or just being in the mountains hunting on your own. It pulls a focus. It allows you to kind of like, it's like taking your car that goes up to 150 miles per hour. You've never taken it past 90 and going on a track one day after you owned it for, 10 years. You're like, I've never seen if I can bury the needle on this thing. I feel like going out and being in nature, I can bury the needle.
Yeah.
Whereas there's all different ways you can step on your own dick doing that around humans in social settings or
Yeah.
whatever it is with a lot of rules around.
Yeah. Yeah, and like you were saying earlier, I mean, just like the whether it be, drawing a bead on a huge bull elk or dropping into a huge wave, it creates a sense of focus that is almost impossible to recreate through artificial means.
I don't think you can
Yeah.
recreate it because, I mean, and this is what people who don't hunt don't understand. This is what got me into bow hunting. I was like, okay, I live on Oahu, so it's just pigs and goats. So I wasn't like super enthusiastic about getting into bow hunting. But two of my like good friends from big wave surfing really got into it. And they kept telling me them. They're like, man, it's crazy. It's such a rush. It's totally different when you're doing it with animals. And they're like, okay, come shoot the targets and everything. And then it wasn't until I went one day with my buddy Wassel and an animal actually came out and it's like, boom. It's a totally different experience. The dynamic completely changes. And I think it's when there's real things at stake.
Yeah.
There's like life and death happening. It's raw. its base level kind of existence. And people just don't understand it. What they have, and even what I had in my mind before, when I was just watching things on the Hunting Channel or whatever, like I had no idea what it would be like. We'd make fun of like the guys crying and stuff on it. Be like, well, this dude gonna cry after he shoots this thing.
Yeah,
It's
it's hard to
just,
understand.
but then you go and do it, and you're like, oh my God, this is a lot. Oh, I'm feeling everything at once.
Yeah, and it's sorry, I just got a pop up on my computer about storage space. Let me throw this away. Yeah, man, and I don't know. I think that like living the a life of adventure definitely makes life better, but it has like pros and cons too. I mean, it's like in some ways I can enjoy my everyday regular life with my wife and kids and stuff more, but at the same time also it's like after a while it's like oh, like after like 6 weeks of the routine you're like I gotta get out, I gotta go do
Oh,
something, you know,
I
it's
get
like
so itchy. It
yeah. It's crazy, man. It's hard to manage sometimes.
is, but that's why I'm so fortunate in Hawaii, because I can go spearfish. I can be out and wild all day long for a day. If I've been busy, I can go do that. Resets me. We do have year-round hunting here. It's just when I get the time, and it aligns with my buddies who will go hunt with me.
Yeah.
So I end up hunting probably like 8 times a year in Hawaii. But yeah, I start getting stir crazy. Especially the weird thing is, especially if I'm in cities, like if I got to go
Oh
be in New
yeah.
York City for like 3 days, it just fast forwards that process. I'm
Yeah.
just like, get me into some wild places because I'm about to pop.
So do you still like just or like when I guess yeah, do you still just like go surfing? Like no cameras, nothing. Just like I'm just gonna go surfing.
Oh, that's most of my surfing,
Okay.
which is that's the beauty of being a big wave guy. Nobody cares about me surfing small waves. Like it's nothing
Yeah.
special. So
Right.
now I can enjoy that. And it took me a long time to not be just so hard on myself and mad at myself for not progressing in that area.
Yeah.
Because I'm not making a living off of that.
Right.
I can just go and have fun. So at least I have that part of surfing that I'm not on the hook to go film and
Yeah.
that.
Yeah, man. So again, we come from different worlds, but I feel like there's so many parallels and just kind of like career-wise and stuff. And other people that might be listening, like, do you have any advice as a slightly older, I'm 37, but a slightly older, you've been doing it a lot longer than I have though, so like more experienced. Any advice for me as a guy, you know, who's chasing their passion as their career?
I would definitely say follow your nose and do what fits for you. If it feels weird to you and forced, don't do it. And it's so much easier said than done, because you'll hold out and you'll be like, oh, that was the only, did I really just walk away from that? That feels really stupid. And people around you will tell you it's really stupid too. And so you'll feel like the biggest idiot in the world. But what happens is I've done that so many times, and something has come a year later or even 2 years later that was more than made up for it and became like a great long-term relationship. Don't be fake. Don't force things. You sleep better at night. You still have some self-respect intact, and it always works out. Like if it's something you're passionate about, it like something always works out. And I've rolled the dice so many times, and I can say that it's never blown up in my face if I just stuck to what I was truly passionate about and where my moral compass was pointing.
Yeah. Have you ever had those moments where you weren't sure if it was gonna like work financially and you're just kind of like operating on faith?
Yeah, like I had like five of them. I went down to zero twice.
Okay.
My career, and it was some of my best years I ever had,
Wow.
like as far as my performance wise.
Right.
Like I was looking at like getting a huge pay raise, and just that's the other thing. It's like there's things that are out of your control. There's macro financial winds that can just blow through. And that's how you have to view these things. It's like when a company engages with you, there can be all the warm fuzzies you want, but at the end of the day, you are like a tagged head of cattle. You're there for to serve a purpose. And one day you're probably gonna get taken to the slaughterhouse. That's the way it goes. It shouldn't surprise you because even if you're doing a fantastic job, there might be a new CEO that comes in. There's a new head of marketing that comes in and wants to pivot, or just there's they made too much product and blew up and got stuck with too much inventory and you had no idea. And all of a sudden they're like, oh, uh-oh, we're in trouble. Those kind of things happen. So that kind of takes you back to just being realistic about what it is, bring value where you can, and do your best to. I also think that bringing value in two different ways is really key, because for my career as an example, they're like, okay, there's got to be cuts. There's this guy and this guy, he's got they both are, or one has a lot of media coverage. The other guy's one of the main guys on the professional tour. He's a big name. The other guy who's got a bunch of media coverage also comes in, knows all of our reps, and helps them work on product. It's like at the end of the day, somebody's got to go. If you got two different vectors in which you provide value to a company, then you're a lot more likely to stay.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's good, man. I'm goofy footed too. I just thought I'd bring that up.
Nice.
I heard you
I would
say one
like
time
to.
goofy footed people are more entrepreneurial or something.
I was about to say that it must be a left brain, right brain thing, because goofy footers, I've noticed in general, are usually really stubborn people. And maybe we got like the extra Neanderthal DNA or something as a throwback.
Maybe, man. I don't know. Well, cool, man. Well, man, I could probably sit here and just pick your brain forever. I really enjoyed talking to you, but I want to let you go and respect your time. So, but people that are listening, Mark is an awesome, like I'll say, legendary big wave surfer, bow hunter, spear fisherman. He's got a lot of really cool content. So, where can people find you if they want to check out stuff you're doing or projects you're working on?
So my Instagram is Healy Water Ops, HEALEYWATEROPS. And then I got my YouTube that's under my name, and I call it Strike Missions. So do all kinds of stuff there. It's just a lot of fun. And yeah, co-founder of Protect Products. So
Oh, you
best
are? I didn't know that.
hydration that you, in my opinion, on planet Earth. And I can say that confidently.
I've heard good things from some friends.
Yeah, I'll get some out to you. You got to shoot me your address, but
Sure,
try it out for your next hunts.
yeah, and my buddy Cable at Lone Star Outdoor Show and Baker from Black Rifle, I know they like it. So,
Yep, I'll
you
get
know
some
those
out to you.
guys? Okay, cool. Cool, man. Well, thanks again, dude. This has been really cool. Hopefully maybe we can link up sometime for an adventure. I don't know. That'd be cool.
Sounds good, man. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for coming on.